everybody. Welcome back to another episode of On the Mix. I'm your host, Lindsay. I had such an interesting time researching the topic for today's podcast. I don't know if a lot of you guys know about this story, but this took place over a couple of years ago, and some recent developments just came to light. So I figured I would talk about this story. Now, of course, I think people know Courtney Love, and I think they know who she is, and I think a lot of people know who Kurt Cobain is as well. Courtney Love married Kurt Cobain. The two of them got together. They had a child. That child is daughter Frances Bean Cobain. Of course, Frances Bean was very young when Kurt Cobain died, so she really didn't know her father at all. So she grew up with Courtney's influence and with Kurt's family, with Courtney's family. So she has grown up in the midst of her mom raising her. And I'm just going to be, you know, kind of honest here. I am not a massive Courtney Love fan, but this is a really interesting story because Frances Bean, her ex-husband, Isaiah Silva, he took Courtney Love and a few other players that I'll be mentioning in this episode to court back around 2016, and he alleged that there was a conspiracy planned against him to murder him in order for them being Courtney Love and the other people that are associated in this story, to obtain back this guitar that once belonged to Kurt Cobain. And it's a very famous guitar. So buckle in, it is going to be a bumpy ride. So I went through the entire docket of the court case. It's online in a PDF file. And there were a lot of parts that I felt like I wanted to omit because it didn't really provide a whole lot to the story. For me retelling it to you, I thought I would just consolidate everything, but give you a lot of detail because there is a whole lot here. So the key players in the story, of course, there's Frances Bean Cobain. There is her then husband at the time, Isaiah Silva. There is her mother, Courtney Love, and then the main player in this is Sam Lutfi. He is a business manager, and he is a self-proclaimed Hollywood fixer, also an illicit drug supplier. And he has a, quote, documented history insinuating himself into the personal and business affairs of female entertainers such as Britney Spears, Amanda Bynes, Lindsay Lohan, end quote, and a bunch of other people. So, of course, as the Britney Spears conservatorship situation has been so public, I think people might remember hearing the name Sam Lutfi, so he's a massive player in this story as well. And Courtney Love has called Sam Lutfi her Rottweiler to Isaiah Silva a million times over, almost to, like, intimidate him. Like, oh, he's my Rottweiler. He will go hard for me. That's Sam Lutfi. The other person in the story, which I think I really don't even know what to make of this either. It's crazy. Ross Butler. So Ross Butler, he's an actor. And what people might know him most for is the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why, if you've heard of that show or you've seen the show. So for me to hear that Ross Butler was involved in this story in any capacity really blows my mind. And it's kind of crazy how he kind of like blew this all over. I don't know if he has really good agents or PR people, but he's still in the good graces of Hollywood after this story, which is crazy to me. And he was considered an agent for Lutfi. So he basically was a drug courier between Sam Lutfi and whenever Sam would have to provide drugs to Frances Bean and Courtney Love. Another semi-key player in the story, his name is Jan Juchman. He was a chauffeur and he was a close associate and another agent for Lutfi. Jan has a, quote, disturbing history, end quote, of criminal activity like arrests for crimes of violence, drugs, etc. The next person involved here, his name is John James Nazarian. So he is a private investigator. How he ends up being a PI, I'm not sure, because he's a crock. He calls himself literally the, quote, scum of Hollywood, end quote. And according to the lawsuit docket, it says that he, quote, produced and posted instructional videos which encouraged women to stage fake crime scenes and make false reports to the police in order to have their spouses falsely arrested, end quote. It's so weird. He actually has this quote, quote, you pick your worst lawyer that you know, we're 10 floors below him. That's what we get paid to do, end quote. Nazarian is also an associate of Courtney Love. Okay, so that's one of the key players there. And then also there's a friend of Isaiah's here that is also a key player that I'll talk about when the whole entire story kind of starts. You know what? Those are the key players here in this story. So let's kind of begin. So Isaiah alleged that on the morning of June the 3rd, 2016, that Lutfi, Ross, and Yan burglarized, robbed, assaulted, sexually battered, kidnapped, and attempted to murder him. So let's start from the very beginning, though. Let me paint you the story, the entire situation here. Let me paint you the story of how Isaiah even came into this picture in the first place. He met Francis Bean on January 8th, 2010. Isaiah was working with special needs children at an elementary school at this time. And he did so for 8 years while also working as a musician, because that's what he really wanted to do. He wanted to be a musician and he wanted to have a successful music career. So the two of them met and they began dating right away after some brief dates. According to emails that were given to Isaiah by Frances Bean herself, Sam Lutfi started to provide both Frances and her mother with drugs in order for there to be favors of loyalty. So there was like a trade-off, right? So Sam was getting ingrained and had been ingrained in Courtney Love's life for a long time. In order for these exchanges to happen, like quid pro quo, basically, Sam would get illegal drugs like benzodiazepines and other such illicit drugs, usually from across the border in Mexico, and then he'd smuggle them, he'd bring them back. They made this whole coded system, Sam Lutfi and Frances Bean. She would say, hey, the cookie jar is running low, and Sam would know, oh, she needs more drugs. Looking through all the emails and the text exchanges, it's just so weird, like the lengths that they were both willing to go to hide that they were involved together in this kind of way for drugs. And it's unfortunate that this Lutfi character was providing drugs to Frances Bean. So that's kind of what was happening there. Now, this was all happening unbeknownst to Isaiah. He didn't know this was happening. And so sometimes Sam would come and he would deliver the drugs to Frances secretly. He started introducing Ross Butler into the picture, the actor. No one really knew him, honestly, prior to 13 Reasons Why, which I think came out around the time that this happened. He was trying to like make his way into the good graces of Courtney Love and the family. So Ross Butler was an easy pawn for him to be like, sure, I'll not only carry the drugs for you, Sam, but I'll provide them to Frances Bean at her house in a secret location, which was usually like hidden in a bush somewhere in her front yard. But after 1 year of dating, Frances Bean proposed to Isaiah on the 4th of July, 2011. And to celebrate, they moved into the house in question here that is centered around this whole conspiracy. So they moved into this house together. Courtney, she doesn't have a great relationship with Frances Bean at this point in time, and she wants to have a connection with her daughter. So she moves to a nearby house that's very close by as a way to mend this broken relationship with Frances Bean. In order for this to happen, she tried to facilitate the help of Isaiah by texting him like, hey, I want to have a stronger relationship with my daughter. Can you help me? Let's do this. But also, I want to introduce you to Sam Lutfi and you two should get together and you should like know each other. You know, it's all going to be quid pro quo. It's all going to be cool, cool. No worries. He's my personal assistant. It's all great. So Isaiah initially was hesitant because he had heard of the reputation that Sam Lutfi carries with him as a person that shouldn't be trusted. And he's a really skeezball character. But in order to appease his future mother-in-law, Courtney Love, I mean, can you imagine your mother-in-law being Courtney Love? I couldn't even imagine. He agrees. He appeases her and he's like, okay. Sam Lutfi then at this point, you know, initiates numerous attempts to ingratiate himself with not only Frances Bean further, but with Isaiah. So again, this is now starting to become more of a thing where Sam and Frances, they're having further and further interactions and discourse on like private emails and text threads where they're talking back and forth about drugs and how to obtain these drugs and where Ross Butler, the drug courier, should place the drugs. And like, you know, Frances is trying to hide all this from not only Isaiah, but Isaiah's family when they were over at the house a couple of times. And not only this, but it got to a point where whenever she would like go outside the house. And Isaiah would notice these moments where she'd walk outside the house to a parked car at the end of the driveway, and she'd walk back in, go straight into the bathroom. She'd be in there for long periods of time, and he was like, this is really odd, you know? And again, he didn't really think that it could be drugs. He just thought this was strange to me. It's becoming more of a problem at this point, but again, he was still on the wiser of what was happening. There was one incident where Francis was in the bathroom for a little bit too long, and he went in there and he saw that she was passed out on the floor. So now at this point, Francis admitted to Isaiah the whole exchange of emails and text threads and the whole scheme of the three amigos, if you even want to say, the three musketeers that they had together. So he was pissed. Isaiah was really pissed. They had set a date for their wedding at this time to be October the 20th, 2013. But due to the strain that they were having on their relationship due to the drug use that Francis was involved in and Sam Lutfi was becoming too involved in their relationship as well, the two of them called off their engagement and their wedding date when it just became too much for him to handle. And Francis decided at this time that it was best to quit her friendship with Sam Lutfi in order for her relationship to get back to where it was with Isaiah before they broke off their engagement. So they tried as best they could to get back together. You know, they tried to mend the trust that was broken between them because Francis, of course, was doing this behind Isaiah's back. So they began looking to get married again in the future. They were like, well, maybe, you know, at some point we'll do it. But maybe not right now, but they were still mending their relationship. Unfortunately, though, Francis and Sam Lutfi started all over again with their agreement of the drugs happening between them. And again, at this point, Isaiah just did not know yet again that she was talking to Sam Lutfi again because she kept it on the low. Isaiah did end up proposing to Francis in a very surprise engagement, and they set a wedding date now for June 2014. So everything was set in stone. This was when they were going to get married. They had been together for 4 years at this point. They had been through a lot. So this is what they were going to do. So in preparation for the anniversary of them dating, which was January the 8th, that was upcoming now at this point, in order to also celebrate their new wedding date, Francis got the approval from Courtney to go get the guitar in question of Kurt's from the storage facility that it was being kept in. Apparently, they couldn't just go and get any items they wanted from the storage facility without both Francis and Courtney mutually consenting to something being taken out. So meaning, Francis most probably asked Courtney if she could take out the guitar, and Courtney gave her approval, and then there you go. So it was okay. So she surprised Isaiah. Isaiah was doing this really nice thing. He was like taking a room of the house and remodeling it to create like an art studio for Francis Bean as like a gift, if you will, for their anniversary and their wedding. So she had this to give him in return. He was like in love with this guitar. He was so happy that he was given this guitar. Like it meant so much to him. So, you know, he understood the value of it. He understood that it meant a lot to music history. It was meant more than his life, as he said in one text message. So he kept it very secure in the master bedroom, I believe is where they kept it. So as planned, they got married on June 29th, 2014 and all seemed to be okay, but underneath it all, when you peel back the layers, Frances continued her drug habit, and she actually got into a lot worse of a mental and physical state. It got to the point where she was using these benzos and these other illicit drugs all the time, that it led to a very scary incident in November of 2014. Francis was home with Isaiah, and Isaiah's daughter was there. Isaiah had a daughter from a previous relationship, and his daughter was really young at the time. So it was the three of them hanging out at their house, and Francis all of a sudden just collapses on the floor while they're watching a movie, and she experiences a grand mal seizure, which is huge because you can die from a grand mal seizure, and she nearly did. Isaiah had CPR training due to his past with being a teacher and a caregiver with elementary school children, that he was trained in CPR. So luckily, he right away got down to administering CPR to Francis, and his brave little daughter ends up calling 911 for him. And so they were on the phone with paramedics. The paramedics showed up. Frances Bean, yes, nearly almost died. And this scared Frances so much, she ends up texting her friends and family like, wow, I almost died, but Isaiah brought me back to life. He said that it was really close and I love you all. That's so crazy, right? So all of this happened, though, due to the drug habit that she was taking part in, because it was being pushed by not only Sam Lutfi, but Ross Butler, who was the drug courier. So had Frances Bean actually died that night, Sam Lutfi and Ross Butler would have been the main targets and the main reasons for this happening, right? Isaiah can only do so much because Frances kept it under wraps from him. This gets to a point where Frances is in such a bad mental state, like a really horrible mental state. 2 years go by now. It's 2016. It's in February, 2 days before Valentine's Day. And Isaiah sees this note in the house, and Frances Bean is nowhere to be found. The note, as he read it, he took it to mean that she was saying that she was going away to get help for her drug habit, and that when she was clean, that she'd come back, maybe. So he was hopeful, like, okay, you know, she had to leave to go into treatment. Okay, but when she's done, she'll come back. So it hadn't been too long of a period between when he saw this note to when he ends up having a conversation with Frances's personal assistant, John Hamilton. And he asks John if he knew where Frances was, you know, and John played stupid initially. He's like, oh, no, I've got no idea. Isaiah was very unrelenting. He's like, please tell me where Frances is. Where is she? I don't know where she is. He was worried for her safety and well-being. So John ends up relenting, and he only tells Isaiah that she's fine, but he wouldn't say anything else. The agreement was that Frances left Isaiah not because she wanted to get help for her drug issues, but because she wanted to divorce him. And she was never going to go back to the house. She was never going to go back. She had no intention of going back to that house. So she would ask her personal assistant, John Hamilton, to retrieve her personal belongings from the house. And never once did John Hamilton inquire about the guitar of Kurt's. He never said, hey, Frances wants the guitar back. Where is the guitar? Can we get it back? They seemed to either forget about the guitar or they didn't care that the guitar was there because it wasn't a point of contention. So Isaiah seemed to think that there was no ill will or bad blood between them in regards to the guitar because it was given to him as a gift from Frances Bean. So Frances did end up filing for divorce on May 14th, 2016. Some months later, the two would have meetings to try and resolve this as peacefully as they could. They did not want to involve attorneys. They wanted to peacefully separate as easily as they could. Nothing was brought up in conversation about, hey, can I have Dad's guitar back? Where is Dad's guitar? Do you still have Dad's guitar? Nothing of that was ever mentioned. So Isaiah, again, just thought, I guess she doesn't want it back. And again, it was given to me as a gift, so I guess it's mine. After the two of them ended up actually splitting, though, the decision to gift him the guitar apparently then started to become a point of contention between Courtney Love and Sam Lutfi. At this point in time, Courtney Love was having financial problems, and Sam was relaying all these financial problems to Frances Bean as a way to extort money from Frances Bean, because Frances Bean at this point in time was essentially the head, if you will, of the Cobain estate, right? It went to Frances Bean. So she kind of had a grapple on the Cobain estate. So Courtney, apparently at this time, was in dire straits. Apparently, Sam Lutfi was saying to Frances that she couldn't afford to pay rent on her really nice villa out there. And she was too. Courtney and Sam were like playing the whole woe is me, crying wolf to Frances Bean so that she would give money to her mother. And I think at some point she did, but the agreement was that she would get drugs out of it. So Frances was like, okay, but can you give me some drugs to fill up the cookie jar, please? So that's where the whole arrangement really stemmed from. And it was going okay for a point in time. So once the two of them split, Courtney was very, very upset that she gave the guitar to Isaiah, and she knew that this guitar was worth millions of dollars. Like, she knew. She knew the value of a lot of Kurt's possessions, and she knew that that was a really horrible thing to have that guitar in the possession of Isaiah, apparently. I think if the two of them had stayed together, I think Courtney wouldn't have really given a crap. But the fact that now that they were separating and that it was, you know, she knew that it was given to him as a gift, now she's nervous because now, oh, Isaiah is in possession of this guitar that's worth millions. He could sell it and make his money. He could keep it and just hold it there for himself. And she was getting really, really, really upset. And according to this docket, Courtney was apparently, quote, obsessed, end quote, with finding a way to get the guitar back. It's Kurt Cobain's famous unplugged guitar. I think she wanted it back because it was worth a lot of money. And she could continue to live off of Kurt Cobain just like she continues to do. So things now started to get really odd and very suspicious. So as the whole divorce proceedings were happening, as alleged in the docket, Courtney Love, Sam Lutfi, Ross Butler, and Yan, the chauffeur, hacked Isaiah's iMessage account on his iPhone. Courtney Love probably said to do it, but Sam Lutfi was the main person that was doing all of this. So they sent out messages to Isaiah's friends and family, impersonating Isaiah. And they were sending out messages making it look like Isaiah was suicidal. And, quote, this was part of the plan to thereafter commit a home invasion, kidnap Silva and murder him, make it appear to be a suicide, and recover the guitar. End quote, which is mind-blowing because it really harkens back to Kurt Cobain and how he died. I'm going to have to do an entire episode on the conspiracy surrounding Kurt Cobain's death, whether it was suicide or murder, but that's what happened there, right? Isaiah did not initially put two and two together that they were trying to make it seem like he was suicidal for this purpose. He didn't know at first. But Isaiah was becoming aware that his iMessage was hacked. His friends and family were calling him, being so upset. Like, please don't do anything. Call me. You know, Isaiah, please don't do anything. So he was like confused why his friends and family thought he was going to kill himself. And he thought about it. He was like, well, I had some conversations with Wendy O'Connor. And Wendy O'Connor is the mom of Kurt Cobain. And initially, when Isaiah was being ingrained and accepted into the family, he started talking to Wendy. Again, Wendy is Francis Bean's grandmother. And Wendy told Isaiah straight up that she believed that her son Kurt did not die based on a suicide, that he was murdered by Courtney and her associates at the time. So Isaiah is now thinking about this. He's thinking about those conversations with Wendy in retrospect. And he's like, oh my God, they are attempting to kill me like they killed Kurt Cobain. So Isaiah ends up placing a non-emergency call to 911. He tells them what's going on, and he tells the 911 operator that if anything were to happen to him, to look into Courtney Love and Sam Lutfi, which is crazy and really brave of him to do that. So now Isaiah's becoming aware, I'm in fear of my life now because they are trying to kill me. So now it's finally leading up to the day in question. So it's June the 3rd, 2016. It's just after midnight. The men in question are Yan the chauffeur, Sam Lutfi, and Ross Butler. The three of them are driven to the house. Now at this point in time, Frances, like I said, she's not living in the house. She never intended to go back to the house. But because the two of them bought the house together, Francis allowed Isaiah to live in the house. Sometimes Isaiah would have his daughter over the house to stay for a couple of days during the week and things like that. So Isaiah was living still at this house. So they knew where to find him, right? They knew all the ways, the ins and outs of getting through the house. So they end up driving to the house and they're dressed in really dark clothing. The three of them trespass onto the property. They somehow got past the locked gates of the house, and when they were around the back, they used a rock to break the glass of the double doors on the first floor of the back of the house. And that's where they then unlocked the door, and they made their way inside. Now, While this is happening, Isaiah is upstairs in the master bedroom with his bandmate, and his last name is Muncie. Phil is his first name, but I'll just call him Muncie from here on out. So Isaiah and Muncie, they're watching a film in the master bedroom, when all of a sudden, they heard commotion going on. They hear something like the smashing of glass. Isaiah thought at first that the noise was made by his cats. So he paused the movie they were watching to hear further, like, is it my cats or is it something more? So they listened closely. That's when they heard a crashing sound. And then the house alarm was blaring, blaring, blaring loudly throughout the whole entire house. Like, okay, something serious is happening. They then heard footsteps. So the three men, they were making their way up the staircase to the second floor where the master bedroom was. So they then heard a pounding on the door. Sam was pounding on the door. So the three of them, the three men, they try to guise themselves as LAPD. So they were yelling, "Police, open up! LAPD, open the fucking door!" So Isaiah and Muncie on the other side of the door, they were rattled and they were shaking. They were really scared. They didn't know what to do. They didn't open the door initially because they were scared. And this really angered the three assailants outside the door. And they continued their threats. They were saying that if you didn't open the door, it would be worse for you. You gotta open the fucking door. It's LAPD. Please open up. So without anything else to really do, Isaiah complied with who he thought were LAPD on the other end of the door. Who could even imagine that when he opened the door, gingerly, may I add, he slowly opened the door, he would not have even known at all that this would befell him. So imagine getting rushed by Sam Lutvey, Ross Butler, and the chauffeur Yan, the three of them dressed in black. And they immediately fling the door open. And before Isaiah could react, Sam grabbed Isaiah and dragged him from the bedroom. However, they did not prepare for Isaiah to be with company. They presumed Isaiah would be alone. So there was already a monkey wrench in their plan because Muncie was looking at Sam Lutvey in the eye and he was like, "What the hell's going on?" Sam Lutvey screamed at Muncie to leave the house. He said, you gotta leave the house or we'll kill you. It'll be worse for you. You gotta go. Meanwhile, Sam Lutvey is forcing Isaiah onto the stairs and he continued to tell Muncie to leave. He continued to threaten Muncie if he didn't leave. So Muncie said, okay, I'm going, I guess. So as he was going down the stairs, Yan and Ross Butler returned to the first floor to take Muncie out the door and make sure that he left. So they pushed him out and they closed the door behind him. I don't know why they wouldn't think to like barricade the door because due to the crime scene photo that I saw, the entire back window, one of them, it was a double door, one of the doors was completely broken through. So he literally just walked out the door, literally. While Muncie was being pushed out the door, he turned back and he heard Isaiah say to call 911. So that's what Muncie ends up doing on the side. So meanwhile, Yan and Ross Butler and Sam Lutvey, they subdue Isaiah. They trample on him. They dogpile on him. They start beating him up really badly. They overpower him. Isaiah is not a very big person. He's not like a really muscular person. I think he's a tall person, but he's not a very like muscular person. He's like a skinny guy. So having three other guys on you that are tall and that are maybe a bit bigger than you, like any man, any person would be subdued. So he tried his best to free himself, but it was really challenging. Sam ended up telling Ross to take the telephone from Isaiah's hand because he had a phone in his hand. And he also took his wallet that had his ID on him. So as Ross took the phone and the wallet from Isaiah's hands, this is where Sam Lutvey ends up doing the sexual battery part of the crime being committed, wherein in a means of like dominance and to assert himself further for no fucking reason other than I guess to be a cool bad guy, like a Bond villain or something, weirdly, Sam Lutvey ends up grabbing Isaiah. He grabs his crotch and he says to him, "Listen," derogatory word that I'm not going to say. He says, "Listen, calm the fuck down. or we're going to drag you upstairs and take turns fucking you. So that was a threat that Isaiah kind of thought that they'd probably make good on. He was scared. He was intimidated. So he tried his best to remain calm and very cooperative as he possibly could. He was in fear for his life. He thought anything could happen. Even though he tried to remain as calm as possible, the three guys continued to beat him up and they removed him physically from the house. So once Isaiah was outside the house, they forced him into the backseat of a black Escalade that was waiting outside. So meanwhile, Muncie was still on the property. He had not left. He heard Isaiah tell him to call 911, and that's exactly what he did. So Muncie called 911, and he called at about 12:24 in the morning. And as he was on the phone, he had noticed that Isaiah was being forced into the back of this black Escalade. He managed to get in his own car, and he somehow managed to get ahead of the Escalade, and he drove ahead of them, and he used his own car to block the road so that the car couldn't pass. So if you can imagine, this is the rolling hills of California, where the roads, especially in these kind of houses, which are like up on, you know, these hills in these desolate areas, the roads are very narrow, especially for a black Escalade. Escalades are massive. So he blocked his own car in front of the Escalade so that it couldn't go anywhere, which was the smartest move. So while this was all happening, he was still on the phone with 911. Muncie was unsure of what to make of this because Sam was trying to say that it was all in good spirit. It was all fun and games and whatever. And Phil was like, I don't know what to believe. But, you know, he told them that they needed the police to arrive. And within minutes, literal minutes, they had an LAPD helicopter flying overhead over the house. And then they had a bunch of squad cars coming into the house and rushing all of them. So at this point, Muncie moved his car to allow the police to come through and take control of the Escalade. Police ordered via loudspeakers for Yan, the chauffeur, to stop the car. And then they were ordered to park the car and roll the windows down and place their hands outside the window so they could see that they were unarmed. The four men inside the car were then ordered to exit one by one and walk down the road to the police officers waiting for them. I'm not entirely sure why the police didn't just rush the car and forcefully take the four guys out and cuff them and take them somewhere. I don't know why that didn't happen, but how this goes is really beyond my comprehension because it just doesn't really make sense as to why it went like this. As the police were trying to get the men to come outside, Sam was making up a story on the spot, as convincing as possible, to make it appear as if like this was all just fun and games and they weren't trying to kidnap him and murder him. So in order to make sure that Isaiah would play along, because he had to convince Isaiah to do this, this is where Lutfi threatened the lives of his family and daughter if he failed to comply with his false story and if he failed to tell it convincingly to the police. That's one thing. It's one thing for you to comply with a false narrative. It's another to accurately and convincingly portray that to the police. And for the police to not question you and be like, are you sure that's what you're really telling us? You know what I mean? So Isaiah really was in a jam. He had to really make sure that he did his due diligence because he knew that Sam had a hit out on his daughter and his family. He knew that they were capable of anything. And so he did, unfortunately, play along with this plan concocted by Lutfi. And he told the police, this was the story, that Lutfi, Ross Butler, and Yan were all college friends from out of town, and the kidnapping had been a prank in order to surprise him, which is funny, because Sam Lutfi at this point, he must have been in his 40s or 50s. Ross Butler is about maybe in his mid-late 20s. At this point, though, he's probably in his mid-20s, and I don't know how old the chauffeur was, but I would imagine he was probably in his 40s or 50s. So, and Isaiah, I believe he's maybe in his 30s. So, like, all of them are college friends? That's really funny. Like, and I don't know, I guess maybe the police believed this at the time. Literally, Sam Lutfi used the excuse, it's just a prank, bro. And the LAPD were like, okay, that's fine. No worries here. Ross Butler fled to Canada before he ever got questioned. And yet again, I ask, how come he was not questioned at all? But also, how come he wasn't extradited back to America when he was in Canada? It really baffles me. I understand that the LAPD are very corrupt, So perhaps they understood, or perhaps they were on the level with Courtney Love. I really couldn't even begin to tell you or explain to you why this happened the way that it did and why the ball was dropped. It doesn't surprise me that the ball was dropped, but that's what ended up happening here. So the way that they explained Muncy, though, was that, oh, Muncy was just unaware that this was happening, and so he made a for real 911 call. But again, it's just a prank, bro. That's what they were trying to tell the LAPD. And I guess the LAPD believed this for now. They were like, yeah, okay. Like, they really used their resources. They used all those squad cars and a helicopter for this prank. Like, I mean, I don't understand. But if it weren't for the police and for Muncy preventing this from happening and coming through and having it go down the way that it did, it was believed that Isaiah would have been taken to a secondary location and murdered. So they were setting it up very nicely for this to happen. But then, of course, it didn't happen that way. So the police just left. So the Escalade with the four men inside ends up driving back up the hill to the house. They held Isaiah hostage for several hours. They were asking him, where's the guitar? Where is this guitar? And they knew that they couldn't really get an answer from him. So instead, they decided that they would extort him into signing a settlement agreement. So now they roped in Courtney's attorney. After some time, an agreement was created and crafted, and Sam ends up showing Isaiah the divorce agreement on his phone, and it had seven terms that he must agree to. One of these terms was, of course, giving them the guitar back. So it was of his best interest that Isaiah were to sign this agreement, because if he didn't, then Sam would hunt down his family and his daughter, and he would threaten them. He would do bodily harm to them. So, you know, Isaiah was in utter and complete shock, and his brain was shot. So he was in a state of constant flight or fight. He couldn't really think at the moment, you know, like, of what to do. He was scared. Just before dawn, the three men finally left the house and told Isaiah, you have to stay here until you sign this agreement. So you can't leave this house, literally having him be imprisoned in his own house. You cannot leave your house until you sign the agreement. And if you leave the house, or if you don't sign this agreement, we're gonna come for you and your family. So that's how it ended. Well, Muncy ends up texting Isaiah's family and telling them what happened. So his mother and his sister got word that this happened to Isaiah, and they bravely drove up to the house. And they corralled Isaiah into coming inside, and we'll drive you away to a different location, and we'll pick up your daughter, and we'll go somewhere else where the family can all be together for safety purposes. So getting back to Muncy, though, this really ends up being a very tangled web, because, of course, he was the monkey wrench in the whole plan, right? Muncy saw this happen. He called the police. He knew who these people were. He knew their faces. He saw them. So in order for them to keep Muncy under their nose, under surveillance, to make sure he would not go to the police again, they bribed his friend with money. But not only did they bribe him with money, they sent him to live in a very lavish apartment. At one point, though, he actually was roommates with Sam Letvy, if you can believe it. They would pay his monthly rent to this very nice apartment. And for some reason, dental insurance was on the table here. Maybe he needed some kind of dental work, because I know I saw veneers in this court docket. So perhaps Muncy really was looking to get veneers. And so they were like, we'll give you dental insurance to get these veneers, and we'll also give you a job. You can be Courtney Love's personal assistant and drug courier. So now Ross Butler was not the drug courier. Now it was Phil Muncy who was the drug courier. He was delivering benzos and Xanax to both Courtney and Francis Bean. This is a wild, wild, wild story, which leads me to believe, it's not even over yet, I'm almost done, but this leads me to believe that Isaiah is telling the truth, because you would have to be a Hollywood script writer for you to come up with this plot. No one else could really come up with this plot. It sounds crazy, but it sounds believable. And that's the thing. When I read this whole thing, it sounded so believable, and I could really, really, really believe it. Some people think that this was all a fabrication. Some people think that it was real. Maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle. I think, personally, from what I believe of Courtney Love and her behavior from the past of what I know of her, I believe this was so in her normal behavior that, yeah, this would happen on her orders, right? That this would happen. It makes perfect sense. Truly, it makes a lot of sense. Phil was doing all of these things for Courtney Love and for Sam Lutfi in order for them to yet again make sure that he would be on the level with them. But he did not want to be associated with them anymore. So what did Sam do to Phil Muncy? He contacted his parents and claimed that Phil was going to jail for credit card fraud and for apparently abusing Sam's dog. I don't know how that ended. I didn't really hear anything more about that. But that, again, just goes to show, like, if you don't do what I tell you to do, you're going to be in big fucking trouble. I'm going to get you fired from your prestigious job. I'm going to stalk and target and harass, intimidate you, your parents, your family. I know where they all live. It's all a bunch of threats. But the thing is, though, Sam made good on these threats, though. Like, they weren't just empty threats. They were serious threats. There was a point in time where I read in the docket that Isaiah's mother was going to, I believe it was a car dealership one day. And as she was driving, she noticed two cars, like big black cars. I don't know if they were Escalades or whatever, that they were driving behind her and they attempted to block her. So like one was behind her and one then swooped in front of her to try to like box her in so she couldn't go anywhere. And she just swerved and went so fast into the car dealership that the cars immediately sped away. And it was also noticed that while at the house, there would be cars, black cars, parked in front of the house that Isaiah lived in still. He noticed some of them wouldn't have anybody in them, just like empty cars. He also noticed on occasion that some of the guys that were in these cars would wear clown costumes. And now he knew and remembered that this was a tactic that Courtney Love had used, because Francis had told Isaiah at one point in the past that essentially, if you want to threaten somebody or watch somebody, you wear a ridiculous outfit because no one would believe you if you say, I saw somebody in a clown outfit in a parked car outside my house stalking me. No one would believe you, right? So she thought that that was the perfect scheme. And to be honest, that really sounds like something only Courtney Love could concoct. This sounds crazy and this sounds maybe fabricated to some people. I fully believe that this genuinely happened, though. So Isaiah was really, really, really scared and he was really nervous about what was going on because he was kept silent from approaching the police and telling them what really happened that night. Because, of course, if he had spoken up, they would threaten to harm his family and his friends. But his family and his friends really corralled him to go and make a report and say, Isaiah, you have to go. Isaiah bravely walked into the LAPD. He made a report on the home invasion that he had. And how they tried to paint him thereafter, because then, of course, this lawsuit is happening. They were taken to court for this. So how they tried to paint Isaiah was almost like an obsessed Kurt Cobain fan, that he was crazy, but that also he was abusive to Frances Bean. I have not seen any reports, any news articles, anything that can back up those claims of Isaiah being abusive in the past at all to Frances Bean. I've seen nothing really. I think they tried to say that because he was in a band and he was married to Frances Bean and that he was apparently, you know, in possession of this guitar, that he was obsessed with Kurt Cobain, that he was a sycophant, and apparently it was a frightening obsession that he had with Kurt Cobain. And so that's the kind of angle that they were painting Isaiah to be. I mean, I don't know this guy, but just from what I'm reading, it didn't really seem that that was the case at all. So it's really up to you guys what you believe as well, whether you believe that this was either a fabrication that Isaiah came up with to, I don't know, what would his end goal be? Would his end goal be to extort money from the Cobain estate and to keep the guitar, to take them to court? I don't know really what his angle would be if he was lying about this. So they also were trying to say that he thinks he was a reincarnation of Kurt and that he tried to look like him and dress like him. I mean, any guy that has long hair and that dresses a bit in a grunge style fashion and has blue eyes and has a beard kind of would, I think, look like anybody from back then. Like, saying that he looks like Kurt Cobain is a massive stretch because he does not look like Kurt Cobain at all. Again, they're trying to paint him to be an untrustworthy person, and they were trying to demean him as much as they possibly could. But the recent news that I found was from March of last year. This lawsuit was settled. So it was settled out of court. The two sides reached an agreement. I don't know what that is because no charges seemingly were pressed upon either side of this. So, you know, it seems to me that there was some kind of settlement in terms of money that Isaiah probably got to keep hush hush. Again, as a means of intimidation. It was almost like, do you really want to continue to go here? I don't know, but I could believe as well, I suppose, that if you want to say that it was all fabricated, that he dropped the charges and they settled an agreement. But again, I would highly say and suggest that if he was lying about all of this, why would her family reach a settlement with him? You know what I mean? Why would they reach a settlement with a man that apparently was abusive to Frances Bean, was apparently saying that he was a reincarnation of Kurt Cobain, that he was obsessed in a frightening manner with Kurt Cobain? Why would they give this man money in a settlement? That's what a settlement kind of pertains as. So why would they do that? That's just my humble two cents. Anything, I guess, could be a possibility. But a settlement was reached. So it was said that Courtney always maintained that she was not involved with the events at the house. She said, quote, I never conspired with anyone else to murder or kidnap Silva or take possession of the guitar. So of course she would say that because yet again, I did not kill Kurt Cobain. I wasn't even there at the house. Well, I never conspired or tried to kill Isaiah. I wasn't there. But that's just what she alleges and what she claims. The guitar in question was sold at auction in 2020 for $6 million. Unfortunate, because that guitar was in the family storage locker for how many years? And now it got sold for $6 million. But hey, you know what? I always believed that guitar needed to be in a museum anyway. But that's the entire story that I have to provide to you guys. What do you guys think happened? Do you think that it's all a fabrication? Do you think that it could be true? There's just so much going on here that it was such a wild story that I had to give this to you guys and let you hear the story and let you guys come to your own conclusions, because there is never-ending drama that comes with the Cobain family, especially when it revolves around Courtney Love herself. So thank you guys so much for listening. I hope that you guys learned something today that you hadn't known about before, and I will see you guys next Wednesday with another episode of On the Mix. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye, guys.